Welcome to another episode of the Brown and Black Podcast. My name is Jack Rico.
And I'm Mike Sargent.
And every week we take a look at race and pop culture through a brown and black lens. Mike, today's episode, we have the honor of interviewing the incomparable Sheila E. And I remember growing up with her music. It was around that Janet Jackson time where she had come out with The Glamorous Life, and then she was rocking the stages with Prince.
Yes.
And she was unique. Because she was a percussionist. And when was the last time you saw
the first female percussionist I ever saw in my life.
Yeah. So she's like a unicorn. Like this very special, skilled person that achieved fame in her own league. It's like there's really no comparison to what she's done. And the fact that she's Afro-Latina, because one part of her family is Mexican and the other one is French black, I believe, right?
Correct. Yeah. And I didn't even, when she came out, Sheila E., she was Sheila E. She was one of these super talented women that Prince would work with. I had no idea her dad and Tita Puente worked together. I didn't know any of that until later on. So I've been following her career since those days when I discovered her as a teenager.
And when I remember listening to her music, Latin jazz to me when I was young, I'm talking about my teens, the music sound, the Latin jazz sound, which is what she's known for, along with R&B, I thought that was salsa. Because if you listen to a Tito Puente jam, it's Latin jazz, salsa, it's all like mixed in. It feels Latino, it feels from Caribbean, but it's also so rooted in Black culture, African culture. And so she is brown and black, brother.
Well, and here's the thing, what you just said there too, the what really grounds and connects, I feel like, the Afro-Latino cultures is rhythm, is percussion, is that sense of rhythm. And it is something that that's where the two cultures meet when it comes to rhythm.
That's right. And so in this episode, what we're going to be talking to her is about, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but it's true. We're talking to her about her first ever salsa album, and it's called Bailar, and you'd think she'd record maybe two or three, but no, that's not it. And I think this conversation really was focused on her, on how personal this album was to her, because going from Latin jazz to salsa, you'd think it's easy, but the challenges she had to overcome, and she also doesn't speak Spanish. Yeah. So we had a conversation about identity, language, how these rhythms connect with her and with the audience that has a perception of her. And how does she break that in a time where reggaeton and Mexican regional music is doing, and she's doing salsa. So it was a fascinating and really enlightening conversation about the music industry and about her identity.
Yes. And what's interesting also is talking to her after having just recently seen that documentary about the making of the We Are the World and how she was, being positioned there specifically, not for who she was and what she could do, but for a different reason. It is excellent to get to hear her talk about who she is and what she's discovered through her music.
So we begin our interview with Sheila E., where we ask her, why salsa and why now? This comes as a shock to me. I actually thought you had done a salsa album at some point, because it just seems so logical that you would have done this. And so we know that this album celebrates the rich history of salsa music, which has roots in Latin America and Africa. How do you see this album fitting into the legacy of salsa music and your own cultural identity as an Afro-Latina?
Thank you for having me. It was a shock to me as well that I hadn't done a salsa record. It was on my bucket list. My bucket list is extensive and it's insane. And then probably 5 years or so, I said, you know, it's time for me to do this salsa record. It took a couple of years to even get to a place where I could actually even record it. And really putting together the repertoire, Tony Sugar co-produced this record with me, and we had talked about it for a while. But just getting this together, there were previous songs that I had written that were in the vault that were supposed to be for my R&B project that I ended up not putting out. And I took a couple of those songs as well, and we flipped them into salsa. Majority of this record is in Spanish, and I tell everyone, I know it's shocking as well, but I don't speak Spanish. I may sing a little bit in Spanish. I understand the music, but salsa music, yes, is amazing, but it is different than Latin jazz. It's similar, but it's not. And so the demanding parts of knowing where the clave is and playing specific bell patterns and rhythms and where the horns come in, but all of that is completely different than Latin jazz. I knew that Tony Sugar, after us first meeting in 2015, doing projects together, I said, you're going to be the one to help me make this happen. I want the young people to understand, like, this music, the culture, the community, the rhythms, everything about it, the legacy of Celia Cruz and Tito Puente and Cheo Feliciano. Like, I did three tributes on this record, and it was just important to me. I could have done a whole album, a double, triple set of legacy, because so many artists, me growing up, had influenced me. It's really important for me to share this music with the young people, because I'm connected so much now to so many young people, especially because of social media. I go on all the time, finding new artists, just starting out, just young people and women. I'm giving them advice and on different things. Salsa music is important to the community, like I say, and I think it's good to share this with them so that this music doesn't go away. It made me who I am, and maybe this will influence the younger people now to even bring this into their wheelhouse and mix it up a little bit.
In terms of your musical evolution on this album, considering your heritage and that your mother is of French African descent and your father's Mexican American, and this album and its rich cultural history, does it have a personal meaning for you to do this album?
Absolutely. Growing up, my dad being a Latin jazz artist, the legendary Mr. Pete Escovedo. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I always have to do that because
He merits it.
Right. Come on now. He's still happening. He has a new record. He's just doing a video.
He's in your music video. Yeah.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
So he's still doing music. So I have to introduce him like he should be. But anyway, yeah, it's really important personally because my dad met Tito Puente when they were 18 years old. And so they've been friends forever. Tito would come to the house. Being able to meet these artists that my dad had a vinyl collection that was insane. So he would practice to vinyls every day, playing that music every day in the house. It was the norm for him to play. And then bring these people, we're meeting them, and then to the house, and then being friends with them, and then being able to perform with them. So I feel that this record is personal because it's still a part of me that no one really knew that I actually had.
Right.
And that's the part. They didn't know. Like, they understand the Latin jazz. They get that part. But I love salsa music. And they understand the connection with Tito and I. But I got to meet Celia Cruz and to be able to play with her. With Mongo Santa Maria, to play with him, to Ray Barreto, to play with him. There's some Cachao to play with him. There's so many musicians, and that's still a part of me that I haven't really shared, even though the people that I've been around, surrounded by, like Gloria Estefan and Emilio, and they all know, but the mass majority of my fans, which are pop R&B artists, they don't get that side. They had no idea. They don't. And so I think that this is personal. It's important because now I'm showing you again another side of me that I've done country. I've done the only thing I haven't done is polka. I don't know. But the salsa.
But the I'd love
I want to hear that. I want to hear that.
Be a jam. A polka. In 2023, you made history by becoming the first female solo percussionist to receive a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Please welcome to the stage the first female solo percussionist honored here on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, Sheila E.
What did that recognition mean to you? And as a woman of color who has broken so many glass ceilings, what message do you hope it will have on brown and black artists who also dream of making their mark in the music business too?
Well, first of all, I'm humbled and I'm honored by that. I was telling the story when I received the star that my friend and I wanted to, I think it was 1980, wanted to pursue my career in LA. So I moved out of, I moved from Oakland where I was born and raised. And I said, I'm going to move to LA and I'm going to pursue my career. We found an apartment and I was out on tour with George Duke at the time. So I was like, I'm already out on tour. I keep flying back and forth from Oakland to LA recording on his projects anyway. So I'm telling the story and literally blocks away from where I say blocks away, it was like 10, 15, I don't know, blocks away from where I got my star is where I first moved to the apartment.
Wow.
Not even thinking that this was ever going to happen. Like my brothers and I and our friends, we used to drive from Oakland to Los Angeles. Let's go see the stars in Hollywood. And when we would get the map, we'd try to figure out where to go and try to see stars and that whole thing. You're growing up going, oh, maybe I might become this, but I just want to play music, but whatever happens. And then to think at the end of the day, it's like, man, down the street is where I started, you know, in 1980, moved to LA. And here I am getting a star, receiving the star. That was just so emotional. You just never know. So again, there is, but it's not that it just happens automatically. Also, the young people now, these days, it's important for them to understand that us OGs, I'm Auntie Sheila to everyone now, so that's all good. But us OGs, the work ethic that we had to go through to get and still sustain is insane what we have done. Like when you think about it and look at it, and the young people now, it's just like they get on one show, my career is over if I don't make it. You have paying dues and making no money and barely having money for food the next day and splitting money with my dad. We have enough to get bread and milk. Those days up to that point. So it means everything.
All right. Whenever I see you perform, whoever you're performing with, there always seems to be so much joy. And even in this new video, the Bembe Colora, you seem to be having such a great time doing it. So it's a two-part question. What do you get most from collaborating with other musicians? And is that part of what feeds your soul musically? And are there any, you mentioned a huge bucket list. So I'm curious, what mountains are there left for you to climb?
Okay. The collaborations are really important to me. Actually, I love collaborating with people. I don't want to be the one to just say, oh, this is me that did everything or have done everything. I love collaborating. I love being in an environment with people coming together to make something happen. I think it's just the coolest thing to be a team player. I might have a lot of the ideas. That's okay. But I'm not trying to be the one, but it's like, oh, I get an idea from someone else having an idea. And that then snowballs into something greater than what I would have even thought of by myself. That's the cool thing. I love collaborating with people. I think it's so important. It's teamwork. I'm not here by myself. The team that doesn't, I'm not saying that stands behind me. We stand in the same line. People have to understand that. The line is the same. We are all in the same line. There's nobody behind me. No, we're in the same line. And so we share this part. And I had to learn that. I wasn't always like that, but I had to learn that. So it's really important to be able to acknowledge all who have helped to make me who I am and continue to lift me up. The supportive team, that's huge. And the mountains that I still want to move are tremendously big. But first, I have to tackle this one.
Was this an easy experience for you to create Bailar, or were there challenges? And what were those specifically that you had to overcome?
Yeah, there's definitely challenges. I don't stay in the place of comfort. I always challenge myself. So then it starts there. And I'm thinking, I know the salsa record is going to take a minute because, again, the music technically, would be technically the specific parts that need to be played. You need to make sure that they're right and they're authentic on top of me then mixing in my R&B flavor, that Creole flair, all of that inside of the salsa and still make it right. Those challenges were challenging. When Tony Sukar, who co-produced this record with me, I told him I wanted to do El Rey del Timbal, which is a famous Tito Puente song. And I said, I have to do that song because we had done it together so many times. I was like, I got to do that song. And he sent me the demo, on the keyboard. And I listened to it. And I was like, yeah, no, that's not even close to being fast enough. And he goes, wait a minute, but it's already fast. And I said, no, it's not fast enough. He's what? So I said, turn it off. And I started playing my solo in my head. And when you're playing a solo live, the adrenaline, even in the studio, but the adrenaline, you're like eons away from the actual tempo of what you would actually play. So I started thinking in my head, hyping myself up, going, okay, if I was playing this live, and I started playing my solo and I said, okay, it's this tempo. He's like, are you insane? I said, yeah. He goes, he's like, it's 200 and something beats per. I said, I'm not looking at the number.
It's a cardio workout.
Yeah, it's a feel. So, you know, doing that song, like it, you have to get it right. And those were the challenges of, there's a part where in that song, the trumpet player, the horn section, they had it rough because they had to play so fast. I'm so sorry. I've been apologizing from the beginning of that song. The one guy, he's trying to hit the note and I hear him and the playback goes, ah, and I'm like, oh my God, he yelled. But that's true to the flavor of really challenging. And so I said, we got to turn that up in the mix. I want to hear him yell. And I kept it in the track. Like, you hear the yelling on that track.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know that it's him. He was like struggling and his lips, they were like, oh. So anyway, those were the challenges as well as singing in Spanish, because that's not what
that's
I do.
That's right.
I don't speak Spanish. I can barely understand it. And that was the most challenging because flipping some of the stuff written in English that I wrote, flipping it into Spanish and then having to sing, that was challenging. It's still challenging. Yeah.
All right. My last question, what did you learn about yourself in the process of making this album?
Yeah, I've been asked that question a couple of times because I said it was so challenging. I've learned, as I always learn in everything that I do, I pushed myself and I kept thinking, what was I thinking that I pushed myself this hard to do this record? But I learned always that you put your mind to it and you put in the work. And a lot of times artists don't want to put in that work. And I know what it is to have to put in that work. And I put in the work and I'm continuing to put in that work. And it doesn't matter how young I am these days, it is more challenging, but I'm putting in the work. And it means then even more work. And you got to keep pushing. Just don't give up. You just got to keep pushing.
Sheila, my last question would be, how do you see the future of salsa? Because this album and you being in it is probably one of the most exciting things in the genre in years.
Wow.
And in a world that is so heavy musically with reggaeton, which has been the sound of Latin music for the last 20 years, and now we're seeing the renaissance of Mexican regional music with Peso Pluma on the cover of Rolling Stone US. These things can't be ignored. And right. So when you come in with a salsa album in the middle of all of this, I'm thinking to myself, what is it that you know that we don't know? Is this the next wave of Latin music in your mind?
I would hope so. I didn't do this to, ooh, hopefully I win an award. This is my passion. It's my love. It's another part of who I am that I wanted to share. I think it's very important. I don't want this music to die, and I have the opportunity to, as I continue to mentor people, that I hope that people take this project on and learn from it to go in and maybe look up Celia Cruz or Tito Puente, Ruben Blades or Fania All-Stars, Cheo Feliciano, all of these artists, Gilberto Santa Rosa, and just encourage them. Here's another set of artists that maybe you might not even know. And educating in a way that is fun, because the record is put your dancing shoes on. You're going to dance.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I hope it is the new wave. I hope it is.
And that's it for this episode of Brown and Black. We'd like to thank Sheila E. for being on the show. And if you would like to support this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. Your help will allow us to be heard by many more people. In the next episode, we continue our conversation about identity and its impact on culture with PhD UCLA professor Efren Perez. Here's a quick preview.
125 years ago, we used to think of Jews and Italians as basically like another minoritized group. And now they are white, right? So it's not their skin color. I don't know what the focus is on, like, well, they're from Western European and so they're a little bit lighter. No. Those groups too, in the 40s, in the 50s, were spearheading anti-Black efforts. They learned how to say the N-word as a way to show other white people, hey, we're just like you. We don't like them either.
You can follow our comments and opinions on @BrownBlackPodcast on Instagram and YouTube. We'll see you on the next episode of Brown and Black.